Investors who saw weak profits and sales at Macy's, Nordstrom, and Target and decided to sell their Walmart stock are feeling suboptimal this morning. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. A lot of big department stores either had a lousy quarter or are worried about a weaker quarter ahead, or both, but not Walmart, which this morning reported much higher than expected profits and sales. Walmart stock went up about 8% in early trading today. Let's go right to Diane Swonk, the CEO of DS Economics in Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good to be here.
Would you help explain this retail landscape for me? I thought the move was online, so the people who had actual stores made out of brick and glass were miserable, but not Walmart.
You know, it's really a combination, a hybrid of bricks and clicks. At the same time that, you know, many retailers are finding their real estate isn't worth what it once was, those retailers who've been able to integrate bricks and clicks, put an online presence, which Walmart is investing aggressively in, have found that they can walk away with even more market share. Even companies like Amazon are setting up places to walk into so that you can buy in-store, and it turns out when there's more things in front of you, you spend more money.
Now, Diane, another big story we're following is, did you detect a tiny hint from the minutes from the Federal Reserve's last meeting that came out yesterday that maybe there might be an interest rate hike in our future?
Tiny. Wow. Yeah, it was pretty big. And they've been telling us they're ready to raise interest rates. And they only want to do it two times this year. And if you want to do it two times, when are you going to do it? June and December is a good time to do it. So if it's not in June, we will get one likely in June or July. They've actually been singing in harmony for a change. And so it's amazing how much it took the markets to sort of wake up and listen to the fact that they could hear the Fed. No, it wasn't all just yelling at each other.
Okay. So something more than a hint. Diane Swonk at DS Economics. Thank you.
Thank you.
Most Americans can't afford a $1 million house, not even close. But a new report says in many major U.S. cities, seven-figure values are becoming common. The real estate selling and buying site, Trulia, finds the share of $1 million homes in America nearly doubling since 2012. In San Francisco, nearly 60% of homes are worth $1 million or more, and it's not just a Silicon Valley thing. With existing home sales numbers out tomorrow, we asked Marketplace's Mark Garrison to look at what's happening with affordability.
For Trulia chief economist Ralph McLaughlin, the increasing share of $1 million houses is personal.
It hits very close to home. You know, I grew up in the Bay Area.
Some of this simply reflects overall rising housing prices, pushing more homes into seven-figure territory. But that's not the whole story.
Most construction today is actually in the middle to upper end.
Urban land prices are sky high, which means developers need to build expensive housing to make money, meaning fewer starter homes on the market.
As a result, middle-class buyers and younger buyers are being squeezed out of the purchase market.
Andres Carbacho-Burgos follows housing from Moody's Analytics. Those squeezed out can rent, but that's tricky these days too, says Carol Galante, a former Federal Housing Administration commissioner.
You can look at rent increases, which are just as astronomical.
Renters can't save up to buy, owners can't afford to trade up. Lots of people are stuck. Unsticking them will take wage growth or more housing, probably both. I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Hi, David Brancaccio here. Thank you for listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. We give you the context we think you need to understand what's happening in the economy and why it matters to you. Some context on us. We are a nonprofit service and rely on donations from our listeners to keep going. And we've just made special Let's Do the Numbers Pilsner glasses available to thank you for your support. Donate today at marketplace.org. The annual mating dance between advertisers and the big broadcast TV networks, a gathering known as the Upfronts, wraps up today here in New York. For days, CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, and their compadres have been parading their new shows in front of media buyers, who in turn have been placing their bets on the new season by locking in ad time. Spending up front has been on the decline in recent years, but this could be a stronger season, even with growing competition from digital and falling viewership. Marketplace's Adrian Hill explains.
Coming to network television this fall, time travel drama.
It could change the present in ways we can't possibly predict.
Time travel comedy.
A really big duffel bag.
It's a time machine.
A super sensitive dog.
I just don't feel very respected.
And an Exorcist remake.
There are voices inside the walls.
Sure, they're going to be bombs. Hold your nose, stinkers. And network audiences will very likely continue to shrink. but primetime ad real estate will remain really valuable.
It's one of the great ironies of television.
Brian Sheehan is a professor of advertising at Syracuse University.
Television actually becomes more valuable even as it becomes smaller.
The networks are basically failing up. Why? They're still the biggest game in town. Cable can't deliver the same mass audiences, and streaming services like Netflix and Amazon don't have ads.
One of the things you need to do is build awareness for any brand. And awareness is really a reach and frequency game, which is what television is so good at.
At last year's upfront, estimates are the five networks scored more than $8 billion in commitments for primetime shows. And while networks are expecting this year to be a better year, long term, they got to rethink their business model.
Stuffing more traditional 30-second and 15-second ads in increasingly larger commercial pods is not appealing to consumers.
Tim Hanlon is managing director at FTI Consulting.
Especially when consumers are getting very comfortable with watching things on demand in subscription environments that have no commercials.
Some networks are finding new ways to blend ads right into their shows. And some big name shows like Empire and Saturday Night Live are reducing the number of commercials they air. As scarcity is prone to do, that may make them even more valuable. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
And soon after the market opened this morning, Monsanto's stock went up more than 6% with confirmation today that Bayer of Germany wants to buy the farm chemicals and genetically modified seeds company for an undisclosed amount. Bayer's stock was down about 9% in Frankfurt at around the same time. If you missed our coverage on the air, you can consult the first Marketplace podcast of the day. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.